And another thing mentioned by Oliver then was the global agenda, and obviously Australia doesn't exist in isolation. And Jenna, perhaps if I could bring you in on this point in terms of the bringing the Australian approach to clearing into line with the international or the global approach. I wonder if perhaps you can give some comments in terms of how you think that process is going and the road towards equivalence.
I think the first thing I'd say is that Australian regulators are supportive of the benefits of central clearing. We've had taken a slightly different approach, and that's because there are different ways that you could achieve the same objective. In terms of what we've been doing lately and our decision to recommend mandatory clearing of the G4 interest rate swaps, we looked at the benefits and costs to the Australian financial system, both in terms of what's happening domestically and also the international consistency benefits. And so our recommendation is consistent with encouraging central clearing because of the financial stability benefits, but it's a slightly different approach to a pure incentives approach. We do believe that incentives are driving trades to central clearing, and perhaps that's something that Heidi could speak on.
Yeah. Look, in short, the best liquidity is coming from the cleared swap market in these G4 currencies and in the Aussie rates market. So absolutely, we source those best prices so that we can get the cheapest liquidity for our customers.
So. Okay, and in terms of, obviously that's the decision to move from a kind of incentive to a mandated approach, and part of that was to be part of the global agenda and to move towards kind of an internationally agreed standard. Are you happy that Australia is going to reach equivalence with from the CFTC, equivalence from both the European and the US approach?
Equivalence on what is the first part, because it's a huge set of reforms, and I think there will be differences, and it's up to overseas regulators exactly how where they draw the line as to what is equivalent or not. Our role here is to make sure that overseas regulators in making these decisions understand our regulatory regime, and also to implement international principles so that there is a greater chance of there being equivalence.
So you quietly confident, or how's...
I really don't know how they will make their decision. It's their decision. All we can do is talk to other regulators, and as Oliver said, we've had very constructive engagements, very detailed and regular conversations with key regulators, and those engagements have been positive. Whether the decision they make is positive, that's up to them.
And potentially you have an international clearinghouse such as the LCH working locally but not offering a truly kind of tailored solution here. And those are the kind of issues that I kind of that keep me awake at night.
I was kind of more referring to the actual regulatory climate itself and particularly the issue of both. Again, to come back to the equivalence issue, you have to operate for Australian banks to operate in the US under the CFTC rules. They've effectively got to operate. The arm of US regulation is kind of extended to Australia, and again with the EU. And whether there's an issue of with markets such as Australia, where you have a developed derivative sector, however, perhaps not as large as is the case in the US, whether the voice of whether the makeup of that local market has been reflected in the global regulations, and whether there's an issue, do some of the countries in Asia need a stronger voice in ensuring that their market structure is reflected in the way that the global regulatory agenda has been driven?
Can I also sort of echo what Lawrence said? In terms of the importance of the international standard setting groups. So we are very active in those groups, putting forward the Australian perspective, our issues in terms of market structure, and the impact of international reforms on a small open economy. So it's really getting our perspective heard internationally in those standard-setting bodies gives us an opportunity to influence the international reforms before they start getting implemented in the major jurisdictions. Ultimately, large jurisdictions are large and they can determine their own path, but we can get our voice heard through those international groups.
But perhaps I could just finish off this topic by getting a kind of regulator take. Is Gregory's confidence, is it misplaced, or is it in the right? Jenny, what do you think?
I would agree with him that although there may be sufficient collateral overall, there are collateral shortage issues in specific areas, and they will need to be addressed. What the solution is a matter for further work.
And is there, in terms of looking for that solution, is there a time frame? Is there a working group in place to resolve these issues?
I think the issues span different areas. So there's issues around CCPs and what collateral they accept, which is a matter for the CCPs and their regulators. There's issues around clients' clearing and what collateral is available to them, and issues around rehypothecation of collateral, which that's quite a different group of stakeholders that would have to address that issue.
Jenny, perhaps you could take that point. Do you think that's the appropriate way to address this?
I mean, I would say that the Council, in all of its papers on OTC derivatives reform, has emphasised the value of choice, of having allowing market participants to choose the venue that suits them most, and to smooth the transition rather than prematurely regulate and force solutions that are not optimal. So I would say we're actually trying not to force decisions that aren't optimal. We would like the market to be able to make the optimal choice for them in terms of clearing venue, what products they use, rather than it being the result of regulation.
So the recent move to mandate some of the G4 currencies, that's an exception.
So that is looking at the market and the overall benefits and costs, and not, it doesn't say where you have to clear. It's not trying to pick a winner in terms of infrastructure. It's making sure that there are choices. Availability of central clearing venues was a key factor we considered in making that recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps a more general question to you, Jenny. Do you think that the industry is fully prepared for meeting the OTC clearing requirements?
I think we've heard from Heidi about the uncertainty, and it's very hard to be fully prepared if you aren't certain exactly what you have to prepare for. So I think there is scope for further preparation, and that's why our approach in regulating is to take a very consultative approach, seek feedback, allow transition times to try and make the transition as smooth as possible.
Yeah, and certainly on the clearing front, I mean, we're obviously clearing at the moment through our sort of member clearing banks, and I think there, you have seen, for example, under the CFTC regime, they've moved on credit and rates products. We don't yet know, when or what the mandate will be in respect of FX or commodities, and so you know, on the one hand, you've got the you know, the market and the pricing sort of pushing you in certain directions, and on the other hand, you're waiting to see what the, you know, what where the, where and when the regulators will interject and just be prepared to respond to that. But you know, as I said, we are all up and running and clearing through clearing members at the moment, and many of us are pursuing those direct memberships as well.
In terms of the, I mean, you touched on FX clearing then. I mean, that's been an area of controversy both in the US and Japan. What's the Australian approach to the clearing of FX products? Or perhaps I can try to Lawrence, is it?
So, in terms of clearing FX products, there isn't a clearing solution for FX yet. There are issues around the settlement of FX that would need to be resolved before you could have a safe, reliable clearing solution for FX. We would be interested in exploring those solutions, but we don't have the answer yet. We'd be supportive of moves to resolve those issues.
Andrew Bowen from Westpac. This is really a question for the regulators, so you don't have to look like that, Greg.
Slightly uncomfortable.
The broadening of the G4 mandate into other currencies, obviously Australia would be next in the frame, as would Canada and the Swedish krona. Do you get a sense that the US regulators or the regulators from Europe, from that matter, will integrate with the other regulators around the world in terms of imposing that or widening that mandate into those currencies? In other words, look to the maturity of the infrastructure in Australia before Australia was included within the mandate group?
The coordination of any broadening has been a key topic and a key area of agreement within the OTC derivatives regulators group that ASIC represents Australia on. The regulators within that group have agreed to consult with each other if they were to look to broaden, and particularly to consult with the issuer of the currency. So we would be expected to be consulted if any regulator was seeking to mandate clearing of AUD interest rate swaps. And through that consultation, we would seek to coordinate. And I think the availability of infrastructure is something that is recognised by other overseas regulators, that you need your market to have access to central clearing before you mandate. So I believe that there would be coordination in that extension.